Is not relished by devotees. Because it is a very terrifying form, and even for Arjuna, the purest of devotees, and all the demigods who are great pure devotees, they were even terrified. So, what to speak of the living entities here? So, in that sense, it is not relishable by the devotees. But having said that, this universal form is displayed by Krishna. This universal form is Krishna. So, the process of Krishna, the action of Krishna displaying this universal form is actually a pastime. Krishna has gathered all the soldiers in Kurukshetra, and the soldiers are divided, Kauravas and then the Pandavas are there. And he has put the chariot right in front of the Kurukshetra battlefield. And out of nowhere, by the request of Arjuna, he is displaying this most magnificent form of the universal form. And we have to see this as a pastime of the Lord, to actually teach us certain aspects of devotional service. If we really look at it, my Guru Maharaj will always say, every verse in Bhagavatam, even if it's describing the trees, actually helps the living entity in his devotional service. Because Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita never speak of anything else. They don't speak of mere trees. Oh, this tree is so nice. Like how, you know, when we read books like Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, you know, these books, they have specially chapters describing the autumn. You know, autumn, that place that they're describing is already visionary. And they will describe how this autumn is so beautiful in this place which doesn't exist. But Bhagavatam speaks on places which actually exist. And when it speaks on this description, it's actually for us as living entities to actually take guidance from these descriptions and change our lives as devotees. So this pastime also of the Lord displaying the universal form is very significant. And we can see that there are few points that is established here. And this point which I established can only be done by Srila Prabhupada. If you just read these 6 verses, when I read them, I was completely bewildered. I was calling the people, I was saying, Prabhu, these descriptions of the universal form, I really cannot say anything on this. But as I went through Prabhupada's purport, Prabhu told me that you read Prabhupada's purport and Krishna will speak. And it was true. It's by Prabhupada's mercy that this topic of the universal form is revealed to us. And this purport that Prabhupada writes, he speaks on many important things which, if we had just read the verse, we would not have known. So few things that are established by this display of the universal form and after Arjuna has requested. One is the supremacy of the Lord. Second point is the will of the Lord. And third point is the mercy of the Lord. So we'll go through point by point how this is put forward by Lord Sri Krishna and is actually guaranteed and is actually supported by points from Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So we'll first look at the supremacy of the Lord. This pastime of Krishna displaying the universal form, really, it establishes his supremacy. Because as we have heard many devotees speak on this series of verses, the main fact is Arjuna is requesting Krishna to display this universal form so that everyone can know that Krishna is supreme, that his supremacy is established. So this verse, actually, where Prabhupada writes the purport, if you read the verse and the series of verses which we just chanted, we can see who are all terrified of this universal form. Lord Shiva is terrified, the Adityas are terrified, the demigods are terrified. And we can just read through the verse and just say, oh, Lord Shiva, Adityas, be reading about them, you know, over the entire Bhagavatam or entire Bhagavad Gita. But very carefully, we have to really look at who these entities are. Lord Shiva, there's nothing to say about Lord Shiva. He is the purest of devotees and he is amazingly powerful. When the entire cosmic manifestation is going to be annihilated, Lord Shiva just has to dance. The Tandava, they say. He just dances and the entire cosmic manifestation is annihilated. And the Adityas, the demigods, they are all very, very powerful beings. We cannot imagine actually. Just by reading we can say, oh, demigods. But my Guru Maharaj, in one of his lectures, he said, where he was actually speaking on a pastime of Indra, and devotees started laughing. And we thought that Mark could just get on with the class, but he stopped the class and he said that we always laugh at the demigods because we hear that they perform some acts which may apparently seem very foolish. But Maharaj said that they are exalted personalities, great personalities, so powerful, we cannot even conceive their power. The demigods are so powerful, we cannot conceive even their power. And having said this, now you visualize, these great personalities are terrified at this universal form of Lord Sri Krishna. So it is very direct and it's very logical also that Krishna is always supreme. Because if you read this, they are really powerful, but they are subservient to the Lord. And the beautiful thing, the really wonderful thing that is happening here is that they are fearful of the Lord. They are fearful of Krishna because his form is very terrifying. But if you read the verses, who are they praying to relieve them of this fear? They are praying to Krishna. It is very wonderful. If let's say I am scared of my headmaster in school, I won't go to him and say that, please give me mercy that I don't fear you. You cannot conceive it because he will not have the capacity to bestow mercy. What he can do is materially, he can just mellow down. But the Lord, maintaining this fearful form, at the same time can give the mercy to the devotee, the demigods, to actually be released of this fear. So this point, the demigods have identified. And this identification is what separates the demigods from the other living entities. It's what separates the men from the boys. It's actually not the bodily strength, the mystic powers. Because Prabhupada writes that even we, if we perform some mystic feats, we can also attain these powers. But what separates them, the demigods, from us, is that whenever anything happens, any trouble that happens, what they quickly do, they run to Lord Brahma. And they all know what Lord Brahma is going to do. So that is why they run to Lord Brahma. And when they approach Lord Brahma, what Lord Brahma does? He runs to the Golden Ocean and he prays to Krishna, submits whatever troubles they're going through, and Krishna rectifies it. They are such exalted beings. Actually, really speaking, if they have problems like the living entities are going through, just by the snap of the finger, it will actually be released. They are so powerful. But even though so powerful, they identify the supremacy of the Lord. And this is very, very wonderful quality of the demigods. And as living entities, this is what we should also take heed from. Because many times the living entities, when they have some problems or some troubles, the first circumstance they run to has to be material. The living entities don't run to Krishna. The living entities have this notion that actually we can solve our own problems. So in that sense, we are actually putting ourselves higher than the demigods. Because the demigods don't do that. The demigods run straight to Krishna. But the living entities run straight to the material problem, run straight to the material solution. And this material solution is always the living entity. We say that, oh, I am now going to solve this. I am going to put this straight. And we get entangled again in the cycle of birth and death. So that brings us to the next point. So we have spoken, they are all terrified at the form of the Lord, they are disturbed, and they also seeing in wonder. And Arjuna is also bewildered by this form. Okay, so that brings us to the next point. Yeah. So as the demigods have identified now that the Lord is great and we have to submit to His will and we have to pray to Him. So this information that is actually given by the demigods is actually what made the difference in the Kurukshetra war. The Pandavas wanted Krishna. They wanted the charioteer. And the Kauravas did not want Krishna. They wanted his entire army. and we know the outcome of the war. So this can be related to how the demigods are behaving here actually, because the demigods are directly always depending on Krishna alone. They don't depend on anything else. But the Kauravas, what they did, they were depending completely on all other paraphernalia except for the source of their paraphernalia, which is actually Krishna. And that is what that made the complete difference in the Kurukshetra battle, where Arjuna emerged victorious and Duryodhana had to accept defeat. It is not the fault of the Lord. It is not. Because the Lord presented himself and also his army, and he asked them to choose, which one do you want? It was never stated, it is not stated in Bhagavatam also, that at that point of time the Lord favored Arjuna or the Lord did not favor Duryodhana. He never writes that. The Lord is very equal, because in the Bhagavad Prabhupada writes that the Lord destroyed chief warriors from the Pandava army also. Prabhupada makes that note that he also destroys soldiers from the Pandava army and also the Kaurava army. So in this point, the Lord is very equal. But for the living entities, it's actually the selection of the object. Prabhupada writes very nicely in this purport. I think it's 1.5.14. The purport Prabhupada writes that what makes the difference is actually the selection of object. The object was put forward, so whatever the living entities select, that is what they get. If we select Krishna, we get Krishna Prema. If we don't select Krishna, we get everything else except for Krishna Prema. And everything else means more trouble. So then, this brings us to our next point. Prabhupada writes also that Bhishmadev was unconquerable. He was unconquerable. So, Prabhupada makes very nice. He said that he is very unconquerable. But he was still smashed between the teeth of the universal law. So you can see that Bhishmadev was seen as unconquerable, but he still was destroyed by the Lord in the universal form when he actually entered in between the teeth. And this point is very, very key in how the living entities and the demigods actually depended upon the Lord. Because the Kauravas depended a lot on Bhishmadev, because he was infallible for them. He was the grand sire and he was completely powerful. But having said that, what happened? The Kauravas lost the battle. Bhishmadev left this material world. By the blessings of the Lord, he left this material world. But we must know that no one in that battlefield was as infallible as Lord Sri Krishna. No one. So this is the point that made the difference. All energy and all dependence was invested upon everyone else by the Kauravas except for Krishna. While Arjuna and the Pandavas just invested on one being, Krishna. And everything was complete. This is a very, very significant point, because Prabhupada has mentioned that Bhishmadev was seemingly unconquerable, but he was actually destroyed by the Lord. And we go on to the next point. This is our position actually. The position of the Kauravas is the position of the living entities. Because we believe the living entities want to depend so much on the fallible soldiers. In 2.14 it is mentioned that the living entities depend on the fallible soldiers like children, love, family and relatives. They depend on these beings. And Bhagavatam very, very nicely describes, Devaki Prabhu had actually noted this point, he actually pointed out this point, that they actually described as fallible soldiers. Fallible means you cannot depend on that object. The object will have to fall because of its imperfect nature. Will have to fall. So, and next point, the 2.14, this verse goes on to say that even though the living entities have vast experience, they still don't see their inevitable destruction. They still don't see. And this is very wonderful, because the Kauravas saw Bhishmadev leaving this world. they saw Karna, they saw Bhishmadev, they saw everyone leaving, but they did not leave their envy towards the Pandavas. They did not. To the extent that another person who could actually vision the universal form is Sanjaya, and he was giving first hand information to Dhritarashtra, and he was getting information because it is all related by Sanjaya, and this Bhishmadev, Drona, they were all going into the mouth of Krishna. Dhritarashtra knew about it because Sanjaya was relating it to him, but even then Dhritarashtra never withheld his sons. He still said carry on. He still said carry on, because everyone was dependent on the fallible soldiers. Even though they could see that everything is now being annihilated and all material things have to deteriorate, even though they knew it as a fact happening right before their eyes, they completely denied this point that only the Lord is infallible. And my Guru Maharaj will always say, this is known as the art of foreseeing. The art of foreseeing. The art of foreseeing means that we should always look into the future. Not as if we can see the future. The future means we are all going to deteriorate. We are all going to deteriorate, and the living entities will eventually deteriorate and die. And once we know this, then our dependence on the Lord increases. Really, this is very, very, very significant point. Because if we just keep reading and we just say, oh, I'm dependent on the Lord, I'm dependent on the Lord, I'm dependent on the Lord, the living entities don't get the idea. When something is pushed down, then the living entities get the idea. And this pushing down of the idea is the art of foreseeing. And the art of foreseeing death. Because death is the greatest force that bewilders any living entity in this material world. So when we see that, when the living entities see that, they are forced to depend on the Lord. Because we can see from Shastras, and we can even see right in front of our eyes, when we see other living entities, when they are passing away, they actually want to depend on their family members, their loved ones. But nothing happens. Nothing really happens. The only thing that happens is that the soul leaves the body. The soul leaves the body, and by Krishna's will, it attains its destined destination. Okay. So we speak of Bhishmadev as not being infallible. He is fallible as written here. But that is pertaining to Bhishmadev's material body. If we see, Bhishmadev's instructions are the most infallible object that can be found. Because Bhishmadev's instructions are not different from the Lord. The Kauravas wanted Bhishmadev's body, but they did not want his instructions. They wanted the instructions on the battlefield. But when Bhishmadev told Duryodhan, now I think we should stop fighting, Duryodhan didn't heed by the advice. He did not heed by the advice. He carried on fighting. What if Duryodhan had accepted this advice from Bhishmadev? It's an infallible advice. Because that was the advice that Arjuna and the Pandavas were following. Because everything was ordained by the Lord already. And Bhishmadev is Mahajan. He had already known that Arjuna and the Pandavas will emerge victorious. He had already known. So for a being who had already known this fact, he's completely infallible. But his instructions and his devotion is infallible. But the body is fallible. And that was what this Kauravas were depending on. And this also brings us to the point of the living entities. Living entities, many times, they depend very much on the body. On the body. As the Kauravas fell, not following the instructions and not depending on the instructions, the infallible instructions of Bhishmadev, the living entities also had small fall downs every day. One fall down that I can think of personally is Mangalarti. When the living entity does not wake up for Mangalarti, it can be considered as a fall down for that period of time, because devotional service to the Lord is hindered. Devotional service to the pure devotee is hindered. And what happens is the living entities always depend on their own material bodies. natural thing that I put forward is that I cannot wake up from Mangalarti. I cannot wake up from Mangalarti. Apart from a self-realized soul, the living entity who says I is referring to the body. Is referring to the body. And the body is something completely material. The body is something completely material. And the living entities depend on this state material matter to help them wake up to perform something completely spiritual. It's a mismatch. It's a complete mismatch. Because the body is dead material matter. Dead material matter cannot give us the life force to actually perform a devotional act. The life force should come from the source of all energy and the source of all life force, which is Krishna. It is a fact. It has to come from Him. So the dependence of waking up, an act of waking up from Mangalarti, should be completely, the living entity should completely depend upon the Lord. Lord, please kindly allow me to wake up and serve you. So in this way, the devotees, the living entities are in complete attachment, complete connection with the Lord. And when this complete connection is maintained, the life force flows. My Guru Maharaj, many times he likes to make this point about the life force. He says that many times we feel tired, the living entities feel tired, is because the life force is missing. The soul is there, but the life force is missing. Because of the complete rejection that we are the soul. Complete rejection. If this life force is identified, then everything else, every activity, not only spiritual, even material activities, can be performed completely well. Very nicely can be performed. Many times, the living entities may say that, I'm tired because I've done so much work before. But it's not because we have done so much material work before, but it's because we have done that much little devotional service. That much little devotional service. If there's more devotional service, there's more life force. Because there is direct connection with the current known as Krishna. And Krishna will electrocute you, and you'll be infiltrated with this energy of the life force. And everything else can be done according to what Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita is telling us. Okay. Next point that we are looking at is, so this instruction of Bhishma Dev, Duryodhan did not heed by. And this is also a very good lesson for the living entities, because this instruction by Bhishma Dev is actually instruction by the spiritual master. The most infallible thing in this world is the instruction of the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master, if you see, even logically if you see, the spiritual master will never say, now you leave your feedback and now you go watch TV for 2 hours. He will never say that. He will never say that. He is always saying that don't watch TV. Don't go out. Don't take food which is not offered to Krishna. So what is actually happening is that the spiritual master's mercy is directly connecting us to the supreme being who is infallible. And so, we have to accept the fact that this instruction of the spiritual master is the most infallible thing for us. It is the most infallible thing. Because direct relation with the Lord is done by the pure devotee. But having said that, the living entity cannot say that I'm not pure devotee now. So I cannot depend on the infallible Lord because I have no direct relation to Him. But by following the instructions of the spiritual master, this fact is not lost to us. Not lost to us. We get the benefits that the pure devotees are getting, but by the mercy of the pure devotees, actually we get more. Because the pure devotees are so merciful. Our spiritual masters are only praying that my disciples should get more than me. They should become better than me. That's what they are praying for. So this instruction, we should always keep by. This instruction of the spiritual master. And as we were speaking about the art of foreseeing, the verse 214 speaks about we neglect these experiences that we get and we don't see our inevitable destruction. What the living entities have to do is that we have to pay attention to the experiences that we go through every day. It's a very down-to-earth thing, but we have to do it. We may see that, this point sounds very normal, but it's actually the point. The point is that we have to relate to our experiences every day. It's written in Bhagavatam that Shukadeva Goswami had assimilated the knowledge of Bhagavatam by experience. By experience. It is never written that Shukadeva Goswami just spoke Bhagavatam. He had assimilated the knowledge by experience. And this experience, we have to pay attention to this experience. This experience that we're going through every day, no matter what circumstance, what situation, we have to carefully identify these experiences and how these experiences can make us depend on the Lord. That is, as I mentioned, my Guru Maharaj said, as the art of foreseeing. It is very, very important that we do foresee, because Maharaj was really emphasizing on this point that the living entities fail to foresee the future as the inevitable destruction, and they just run about doing the activities. But if you really see that you're going to die, then really our activities will be centered towards Krishna. And so that brings us to our next point. Okay, so the prayer that we should be praying every day with regards to this point, that we have to depend on the Lord and not depend on anything else. This prayer was also given to me by Devaki Prabhu once. It's 4:20:31. He said that Guru Maharaj had actually emphasized on this verse. It's 4:20:31. If I'm not wrong, correct me, Prabhu. I think Prithu Maharaj is praying this prayer. Tvanmayayada janeshakandito yatan yadashastarkarmano buddha यताचरे बाल हितं पिता स्वयं तथा त्वमेवाधसिन समीहितु. Prithu Maharaj says, O Lord, please do not ask me for any material benefits. He says, please do not ask me for any material benefits. Because he says the living entities are always depending on this society, friendship and love. Because that is what the living entities are depending on. So if they are depending on that, they will only ask for that, those material benefits. And he says, Yatachare Bala Hitam Pita Swayam. As a father knows what to do unto a son, so in the same way, you give me what you feel is best for me. This prayer completely personifies the mood of dependence on the Lord. That means even the minute independence that we have, we give it, we throw it back to the Lord, saying that, no, you are infallible, please, now you tell me what to do. Don't ask me for any material benefits. And this is a very, very safe prayer. It's a very, very safe prayer. Because the Lord will never do anything bad for us. I asked my Guru Maharaj this question once. Maharaj, sometimes I find that it's very difficult for me to follow your instructions. And he just looked at me and he said, son, do you think I would ever want harm to befall you? Do you think? Look at me and tell me, do you think that I would want harm to befall you? And this is the position of Lord Sri Krishna. Because the Lord does not want any harm to befall us. If we actually keep this independence, then we want harm to befall us. But when we give it back to the Lord, then when the Lord is completely in control of us, then what happens is we are completely safe. And this is what the demigods are doing. The demigods' ultimate refuge is Lord Krishna. Ultimate refuge. As we say, everything, they run to Him. So as living entities, any problem that we have, before we grab anything else, the living entity should grab Bhagavatam, should grab Bhagavad Gita, and most importantly, they should keep in touch with their spiritual masters. We cannot say now that now I will solve my material problem, then I will tell Guru Maharaj that how I have fed. That's not the point. Because Krishna is in control. How can we do something and then tell Krishna, Krishna, I did it, so do you think it's good? Krishna is the infallible Lord. He is the one who is going to give the mercy. So spiritual master is saying, whatever we're going to take up, the spiritual master is going to give the mercy. The living entity can never say that Maharaj, now I've done this, so please verify, check, stand. No, that's not the way. The spiritual master will verify, he will check, he will say, okay, alright, carry on. As I have heard, I'm repeating this because this is what I have heard from my God brothers like A.G. Poet Kinkarabu. They always emphasize that before you start anything, you call Maharaj. You call Maharaj in, you tell him before you start. Because after you start, and then you tell spiritual master, it's a formality. Maharaj, yes, I started. Okay, now you know. Then we just put down the phone. It's like Nekibro always tells me, it's just armchair philosophy with the spiritual master. It's just like our grandfather, we just pay obeisances and we say that now I'm doing this, I have children, I have kids, so I'm going on with my life. But spiritual master is not someone like that. He's the representative of the Supreme Lord. This gravity, this information of about the spiritual master should sink in to every living entity. And as it sinks in, then really life becomes completely sublime. Life becomes completely sublime. So we move on to the next point. So dependence, as one of the points we are speaking, dependence on the will of the Lord. Arjuna could visually see the will of the Lord. He visually saw Bhishmadeva was going in, Dronacharya was going in. So he could see. So he could say, yes, I am seeing the will of the Lord, so I am relating, so I will depend. Because what the eye sees, it will believe. The being will believe what the eye can see. But we see also living entities on the other side of the Yami, who actually did not get this visual view of the will of the Lord. And this one being that who didn't get this, who is mentioned in this book, Bhishmadeva. Bhishmadeva could not visually see the will of the Lord. But Bhishmadeva was completely always depending on the will of the Lord. Bhishmadeva, we must know that he is the grand sire and the commander-in-chief of the Kaurava army. And if he is the commander-in-chief, what Bhishmadeva actually does is that he plans out the formations, the attack strategies on how they are going to attack the Pandavas. And he distributes it to the Kaurava army. And Bhishmadeva is a devotee of Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna is on the other side of the army. And Bhishmadeva is drawing up plans to actually annihilate the army where the Lord is. He is distributing very, very careful planning. Bhishmadeva is completely expert. If there was one man who could annihilate the entire Pandava army, that's Bhishmadeva. It's even stated in Mahabharata that Arjuna actually could not defeat Bhishmadeva. If we read Mahabharata, if the Lord didn't intervene, Bhishmadeva would have killed Arjuna. It's only because the Lord came in between, Arjuna was saved. And Bhishmadeva was drawing up all these plans. But the thought that was running in Bhishmadeva's mind, what was he telling the Pandavas? You have already won because the Lord is on your side. He knew the point that you have already won. But at the other side, he was planning. So it is a very inconceivable, it's very inconceivable character of the pure devotee. He's doing expertly to destroy the other army, which he already knows has won the battle. So this is actually the main point of this verse, what the demigods they are doing, what the demigods are doing, what Prabhupada is writing. They are carrying on with their activities very perfectly. Bhishmadeva, if you read Mahabharata also, I can share because Gurukanti Prabhu, Dirki Prabhu, they have shared some points with me that how powerful Bhishmadeva was. Very, very powerful being that even thousands, millions of arrows could be shot at him, but he would still counter. And at that point of time, Bhishmadeva, if you just draw the scene of the battlefield, Bhishmadeva is very old and he's very powerful. He's like an elephant. And Bhagavatam writes that when Lord Krishna took the wheel to smash Bhishmadeva, it was as though a lion was attacking an elephant. And the Lord was so angry that he dropped his dhoti on the way. It's a very, very amazing scene that is painted by Prabhupada, you know, in his purport. So as the Lord, and if you see, Vishwadeva is the most powerful, he is the oldest. The Lord is actually, if you see, he's a young boy, if you see, because the Lord, his appearance is that of a 16-year-old. So as he was running, what did Vishwadeva do? The very man who planned out the entire plan for the battle strategy, the very man who planned out the entire battle strategy, just dropped everything and fell in front of Krishna and said that, you know, do what you have to do. I'm now submitted in front of you. Vishwadev did that. He dropped all his plans. He planned everything. But when the Lord planned, he said, it's your plan. Now you do what you will. And this is the perfect example of dependence on the Lord. The living entities can plan as much as they want. It is good to plan. It is good to plan. My Guru Maharaj always says, we must always plan our activities. But he always says, when you are caught up in your plans, you are caught up in your and when you are dependent on your plans, then everything falls. Even if you succeed in your plan materially, spiritually you will fall. Spiritually the living entity will fall. But if the material plan fails, but the devotee recognizes that that was actually the will of the Lord, the plan of the Lord, then materially he loses, but spiritually he gains everything. Everything he gains. It is very wonderful of how Krishna has actually planned his entire thing. How Krishna has planned his entire thing, and Bhishmadev is acting out as the instrument of the Lord. He's acting out this entire topic on dependence on the Lord very nicely in this battlefield of Kurukshetra. And just 2 points. I think that's it. Any more time? Okay. Just 10 minutes. Sorry, Guru. Okay. This 2 points on the dependence of the Lord. One is the action. The action we have already gone through. That how Vishwadev dependent on the Lord. And then now is the process. The process of depending. The process of depending cannot just be said that now I go in front of the altar and I say, Lord, I depend on you. Vishwadev also gives how to depend on the Lord. He prays in the verse 1932. Iti mati rupa kalpita vitrisha bhagavati sadvata pungave vibhumi swasukam upagate kvachit vihatum prakartim upeyushi yadvava prabhava. He says that, let my thinking, feeling and willing be invested upon you, O Lord. This is the process of dependence. This is the process when the living entity's thinking, feeling and willing is connected with the Lord. Whatever we think, whatever we feel and whatever we will is in cognizant, is one with the desire of the Lord, then there is dependence. Then there is dependence. If we don't do that, then the living entity can cry to the cows come home, but the living entity is not dependent on the Lord. It's very practical. It's very, very practical. On the ground, we have to perform activities which actually show that the living entity is dependent on the Lord. And so this process Vishwadev gives very nicely. And then we go on to see, yeah, this one is, and how should this dependence be done? This thinking, feeling and willing should be done with one pointed attention. It shouldn't be done in a haphazard manner. Shouldn't just go into the altar, once the head touches the floor, all the prayers rattle off, boom. And then we are back to doing whatever we need to do. This is not the sign of dependence. Dependent means the thinking, feeling and willing should be done with one pointed attention. When one pointed attention is there, then the direct connection through the agency of the spiritual master with the Lord is established. This one pointed attention is key. This one pointed attention is key. Because if the one pointed attention is not there, then what happens is the living entities run towards sense gratification. They run towards sense gratification. Anything done haphazardly is pointing towards sense gratification. Because when the senses are impatient, everything else is done haphazardly. The senses will say, come on, watch TV. And that's it. This is the impatience of the senses. It's driving us towards that gratification. But when the mind is forced to one-pointedly perform devotional service towards Krishna by investing this thinking, feeling and willing, then the connection is established. Then the complete dependence is there. The complete dependence is there. And the last point that I would just like to bring up before I conclude is devotees with this thinking, feeling and willing, and by being one-pointedly doing these three acts, they are always balanced. They are always balanced. By performing these three acts of thinking, feeling and willing in one-pointed attention, the living entity is completely in balance. This thinking, feeling and willing, just contemplate on it. This thinking, feeling and willing, if it's done with one-pointed attention, then the living being is in balance. This thinking, feeling and willing, if done in any other manner, completely destroys, like what is written, the equilibrium of the devotee. Because the thinking, feeling and willing runs everywhere else except the Lord. And the Lord is actually the anchor. And where there is no anchor, the mind will run to everything else. So this balance is maintained by this one-pointed attention. If not, like mentioned, it runs towards sense gratification. So to conclude the points that we have just seen, so the verses speak on how, if you really see, the verses actually completely speak on how only the Lord's will prevail. And how the devotees, like the demigods, like Arjuna, have to completely depend on the will of the Lord. Because if we don't depend on the will of the Lord, then we have to depend on everything else, like mentioned in 214, the infallible soldiers. The infallible soldiers. And also, how should we depend on Him? By this thinking, feeling and willing, done with one-pointed attention. And just one other point that comes up to the aspect of dependence is that a devotee who is completely dependent does not discriminate. Does not discriminate. A devotee who is completely dependent on the Lord will never discriminate. Bhishmadev never discriminated between Kaurava army and Pandava army. Even though he drew the strategies for them, he was still loving towards the Pandava army. So he never discriminated, because Bhishmadev accepted that every living entity or every living object, the way they are actually created is by the Lord. And all this variegatedness that we see in this material world is actually the creation of the Lord. And if we see the prayers of the Avadhut, not the prayers, the instructions of the Avadhut to Prahlad Maharaj, the Avadhut tells Prahlad Maharaj that different people of different mentalities, it is not my business to blaspheme or criticize anyone. I just want them to come towards Krishna. So this point is very key. If we are not dependent on the will of the Lord, if we are not dependent and cognizant of the Lord's creation, then what happens is this discrimination comes about. So this is also one of the concluding points of this verse, that we should not, the living entities should never discriminate. If the living entity shows slight signs of discrimination, then the living entities should actually accept that they are not dependent on the Lord. Because if the living entities are dependent on the Lord, then they will accept whatever as it is. If anyone is going to show us a long face or a bright face, it's the same. Because the Lord's creation is in such a way. So by acceptance of the will of the Lord and depending on His will, this discrimination never comes about. And in this way, these few verses on the universal form, the descriptions and the actions of the demigods and Arjuna becomes very clear to us. So by putting it, like what Dilkipo always tells me, if you put this verse into practice, then any form or any verse becomes very, very clear. So I'm really sorry if I said anything wrong during the course of my discussion, because I'm really very young and sometimes I get too passionate and I may sound a bit passionate. So just, yeah. Are there any questions? Yes.
So we are
Thank you, Guru.
Yeah.